Welcome to Afterglow. I'm your host, Mark Chilla. How does a jazz pianist from Chicago become one of the biggest singing stars in Los Angeles? This is the story of the early years for Nat King Cole. In the late 1930s, Cole and his King Cole trio were developing a new, innovative sound. However, they were recording mostly for radio airplay rather than commercial sale. This week I'll feature songs from a new box set from Resonance Records highlighting these early years for Cole and his trio, and we'll also hear from jazz historian Will Friedwald, who will provide insight into Cole's early development. It's The King Cole Trio Starts to Swing, coming up next on Afterglow.
Ra-da-da-da-doo-da-dee, ra-da-da-da-doo-da-dee, ra-da-da-da-doo-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da Far away, far away, there, where my heart is turning ever, that's where the old folks stay. All be well and sad and dreary everywhere I roam. Oh, dark is how my heart grows weary, far from the old folks, far from the old folks, far from the old folks at home. Rata, rata, daddy and loot, la lo de, daddy and loot, la lo de, daddy and loot, la lo de, do da, you can hear those cats a swinging on that old Kentucky shore. Rada, 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 lo da de. You can hear those guitars playing as they beat out to the Lord. Dear old Southland, da-da-da, 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 way down upon the Swanee River, so far, so far, so far, so far away. There's where my heart is turning ever. That's where the old folks, that's where the young folks swing out, oh boy, they're having themselves a ball. You can hear them swinging from morning till night, beating out to still early bright, way down, way down, da 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 da.
I saw her kneel and say a prayer for me.
Save it.
when winter's gone and spring comes on. I'll meet her by the river St. Marie.
Two River Songs performed by the King Cole Trio in 1938, featuring Nat King Cole on piano, Oscar Moore on guitar, and Wesley Prince on bass. Just now we heard By the River St. Marie, a song written in 1931 by Harry Warren and Edgar Leslie. Before that, Swanee River by Stephen Foster. Both of those recordings were made for the Standard Transcription Company. Mark Chilla here on Afterglow. On this show, we're exploring the early years of Nat King Cole, taking a close look at a new box set from Resonance Records called Nat King Cole Hitting the Ramp, exploring all of his known recordings between 1936 and 1943, just before he signed to Capitol Records. I also got a chance to talk to one of my favorite jazz historians, Will Friedwald, over the phone, who is the author of a brand new Nat King Cole biography. Friedwald has written many books about jazz singers, including his 1995 book on Sinatra called The Song Is You. If you've ever picked up a Nat King Cole CD, chances are Friedwald wrote the liner notes. His new book, called Straighten Up and Fly Right, is published by Oxford University Press, and it's sure to become the definitive Cole biography. We'll hear from Will Friedwald throughout the hour. Let's start at the beginning. Nat King Cole was born on St. Patrick's Day, March 17, 1919, in Montgomery, Alabama. But soon after he was born, Nat's father, a Baptist preacher, brought the family to Chicago. Many African Americans were moving from the rural South to the urban North during this period, known as the Great Migration, in order to provide better lives for their families. Chicago, as it turned out, was a serendipitous place for the Coles to end up. Here's historian Will Friedwald.
Well, Chicago was, you know, ground zero for the jazz age. It was the expression of black popular music at that point. It was just omnipresent. You couldn't, you know, be in the street at night and not hear some kind of music. And that was part of it. I always say that if their father, who came to Chicago to be a reverend, to preach the holy gospel, if he didn't want his kids to be musicians, then he came to the worst possible place, because that was just absolutely ground zero for the jazz age. That was where everything was happening. That was the heart of it.
Nat and his older brother Eddie became immersed in the music scene in Chicago. Eddie took up the bass, but for Nat, his love was piano, and he began to absorb the jazz styles all around him. Here's Friedwald again.
He really just learned from listening and, you know, being an amazing natural talent, you know. And in the absence of other evidence, we have to say that he was just almost entirely self-taught, or just by hanging around piano players, and they showed him, you know, how to play this and how to do that, and he picked it up like one trick at a time, how to do all that. There's no evidence that he really studied formally or otherwise, just, you know, learned on the job. And he was just a natural musician.
The one piano player that influenced Nat the most was Earl Fatha Hines. That's who you're hearing in the background right now. Hines had a virtuosic early jazz style that was harmonically complex, and Nat updated it by emphasizing that all-important element of swing. Even as a teenager, Nat showed tremendous talent, winning contests for his piano playing. Eddie, his brother, left Chicago to tour with noted jazz musician Noble Sissle. But when Eddie heard about Nat's growing success in Chicago, he came home to form a band with his brother. This union eventually led to Nat's very first recording, made for Decca Records in 1936. The band was called Eddie Cole's Solid Swingers, although Nat was really the de facto leader.
Well, the band came out under Eddie's name, but as we know, it was really Nat's band, and they were playing a club called the Panama Cafe, and they got a lot of great press notices, enthusiastic reviews in the local black press. And J. Mayo Williams, who was the head of the Decca Records Sepia series, the race record series, decided to record them for Decca, and they made these four sides. And Nat takes a piano solo on all four of them. You can really hear Nat, you know, playing on it. And again, he's 17 years old, but already playing with amazing maturity, although not as good as he would later on, but still very, very far advanced for a 17-year-old.
Let's hear a bit of that band now from their 1936 session for Decca. This is Eddie Cole's Solid Swingers, featuring Nat Cole on piano, with Nat's original song written for Chicago's Panama Cafe. This is Stompin' at the Panama on Afterglow. First recording session featuring Nat Cole. That was him on piano in July 1936 for Decca Records, with the band he made with his brother Eddie, called Eddie Cole's Solid Swingers, and Nat's original song, Stompin' at the Panama. Eddie Cole's Solid Swingers were not built to last. There was tension between the two brothers, since Nat did most of the work, and Eddie took most of the credit. It was made more complicated when an older dancer named Nadine Robinson got between them and fell for the younger brother Nat. The two eventually got married. Their fortunes changed in 1937 when Noble Sissel, Eddie's old bandleader, came to them with an opportunity. Here is Cole biographer Will Friedwald again.
Noble Sissel, who I mentioned earlier, came back into the life of the Cole brothers when there was a new edition of the show Shuffle Along that was put together, which was, of course, the show that Noble Sissel had written in 1921. It was one of the big, like the most successful show in the history of Black Broadway. It was a real deal breaker of a show. And they were doing a new edition, and even though Noble Sissel wasn't involved, apparently he was the one who got the producer of the new show to seek out Eddie in terms of somebody to, you know, lead a band for the show. But then wound up that the brothers had this big fight before the show left Chicago. So Eddie stayed in Chicago and Nat went on the road with Shuffle Along, the new edition.
The show, Shuffle Along, took Nat and his new wife Nadine all around the country. However, it folded a few months later, shortly after they arrived in Los Angeles. So Nat and Nadine made the decision to stay in Los Angeles.
Matt always knew exactly what he was doing at every stage. And I think that when he got to California, he thought that this is his chance to, you know, start his own career and start up, make a fresh start in a whole new part of the world. And I think he very deliberately wanted to stay in Los Angeles. But the thing about Nat is that he tended to mythologize his own career. And one of the things he said over and over was that every good thing that happened to him was an accident. The fact that he wound up stranded in Los Angeles and then started his career there was an accident. The fact that he put together a trio, the famous King Cole Trio, that was an accident. The fact that he started singing, that was an accident. And, you know, Nat was born, as you know, on March 17th, 1919, which was St. Patrick's Day, and he always identified with the Irish. Whenever people would say, gee, Nat, how come you're so successful? He would attribute it to the luck of the Irish and say that he carried a shamrock in his back pocket. But when we really look at what he did and what he achieved and how he did it, it becomes clear that that luck had nothing to do with it, that it was a question of good judgment and good timing, and that's, you know, what brought him to California in 1937.
As talented as he was, Nat had no trouble getting work as a pianist. He did fairly well for himself, too, especially for an 18-year-old kid. Like he did in Chicago, Nat formed a band in Los Angeles, but this time, instead of a big band, it was a trio. There's an old story that says Nat's new King Cole Trio, featuring Nat on piano, Oscar Moore on guitar, and Wesley Prince on bass, was formed out of necessity, that they were trying to work at a place called the Swanee Inn, but the bandstand was too small to fit more than three players. Friedwald has a different theory.
I think that what happened was, as we know, his bass player, Wesley Prince, reminded him of the King Cole fairy tale. He said, you know, we should use King Cole as kind of a branding thing, and Nat ran with that idea. And, of course, King Cole had his Fiddlers Three, an early billing of the trio, an early, like, advertisements are sometimes referred to as the Jester's Three or the Swingster's Three after, you know, King Cole and his Fiddlers Three. The idea was to, you know, kind of use that as a branding imperative. And so, therefore, it had to be a trio. And he decided to have a piano, bass, and guitar because he met this incredible guitar player named Oscar Moore, who was just a prodigy. He was to the guitar what Nat was to the piano. And that's really what the King Cole Trio was based on, the amazing partnership of Nat King Cole and Oscar Moore.
Fairy tales and nursery rhymes were not only important for the King Cole Trio's name, but also for their repertoire. Novelty records based on nursery rhymes or classical melodies made up a significant part of their repertoire in the early years. They were familiar, and being in the public domain, they were also cheap. The King Cole Trio was able to revive these numbers with some swing and some virtuosity. Here's the King Cole Trio, Nat and his Fiddlers Three, in 1938 performing some swinging versions of public domain songs, beginning with Patty Cake, Patty Cake, on Afterglow.
We still love those nursery rhymes of those happy childhood days, for they have a charm you can't resist. Now there's one especially that has always haunted me, but we swing it with a little brand new twist. And it goes like this, patty cake, bake a man. Mix your music in the rhythm pan. Give it all the heat you can. Serve it right away. Patty cake, bake a man. What you got is really in demand. Dish it with your expert hand. Start that band to play. Get that oven piping hot, like you always do. Stir up all the pep you've got. Make some swing-a-roo, you do too. Patty cake, bake a man. Mix your music in the rhythm pan. Give it all the heat you can. You better serve it right away. The bake a man will win you, cause his jive will really send you. You will shout, you will shout, you will shout, you will shout. When his recipe is finished, and he put in the diminish, and he knock you out, lay you out, lay you out, lay you out. Patty, patty cake, bake a man. What you got is really in demand. Dish it out with the expert hand. You better serve it right away. Thank you.
da do da do da ra da 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 do la da patty 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 big old man. Give it all the heat you can. Da do da 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 ra da 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 chopsticks, oh chopsticks, there's nothing like chopsticks to help any romance along. Ra da 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 da, four hands start playing, two heads start swaying, and two hearts start singing a song. If one of us makes any music mistakes while we're chop 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 chopping the sticks, no need to get mad, for there's nothing so bad that a couple of kisses can fix. Then let the duke, let's play together. We'll find out whether we'll ever be really in tune. Don't dare to stop till our hearts go pop, pop, pop. We chop, 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 chop in the sticks. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. 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 Ra-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Public domain novelty numbers by the King Cole Trio. Just now we heard a vocal version of the familiar piano tune Chopsticks, and before that, the nursery rhyme Patty Cake. What you heard there was not a commercial recording, but rather a radio transcription, a recording made only for radio play, not for commercial sale. At the time, this seemingly counterintuitive practice was actually mandated by both the musicians' union and the record companies. Here's biographer Will Friedwald.
At that point, they thought that if you heard a record on the radio all the time, you would not want to buy it. So because they couldn't play commercial recordings on the air, they developed a scheme to which they would record pre-recorded music just for radio play. And there were several businesses companies that sprung up around this idea. And by the time that Nat was starting to, you know, be popular in Los Angeles, this really was a big industry, radio transcriptions. In fact, they were probably comparable to the regular commercial recording industry because, you know, during the Depression, a lot of record companies went out of business. Nobody had 35 cents to spend for a record when, you know, for 15 cents, you could buy a loaf of bread. Surprising, unlike the record companies, which were mostly based on the East Coast, a lot of the transcription companies were based in Los Angeles and San Francisco, and they were the first to latch on to Nat. He started recording for them when the trio was only about a year old, around October 1938.
The style of many of these radio transcriptions were not really jazz either, as you may have noticed. They were basically trio vocal tunes in the style of something that you might have heard from other black pop groups like the Inkspots or the Mills Brothers. The King Cole Trio's more overt jazz numbers and Nat's emergence as a solo vocalist came much later, and I'll have more on that later in the hour. First, here's another radio transcription from the King Cole Trio, and a Nat Cole original song, too. You'll hear the trio vocals throughout, with a slight nod to jazz improvisation, but staying clearly on the side of pop. Here's the King Cole Trio in 1939 with the song, I Like to Riff, on Afterglow.
I like to riff, do la ba do da da da. I like to riff, da 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 da. Riffing is a thing for me. I like to riff, cause it puts me solid in the groove. I like to riff, for it's a solid killer. Da 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 da. Riffing is a thing for me. If you want to be a sender, knock your friend to the deuce of gender. Grab a major scale and run it. Rabba do da ba do da ba. Zip, I like to riff, cause it makes you feel so fine. I like to riff, it takes troubles off your mind. Brother doodly da 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 do da. Riffing is the thing for me. Riffin' is a thing for me. Be loo la loo la loo la loo da da. Ra da di 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 di. Ra da ra da 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 loo ra da ra da 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 loo da ra da loo di da loo la da da. Riffin' di 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 di. I like to riff, cause it makes you feel so fine. I like to riff, it takes troubles off your mind. Rada doo da 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 da. Riffin', riffin' is a thing for me.
The King Cole Trio in 1939 with a Nat Cole original song, I Like to Riff. That recording was made for the Standard Transcription Company, exclusively for radio airplay. Coming up in just a moment, we'll hear more from the early years of Nat King Cole. Stay with us. I'm Mark Chilla, and you're listening to Afterglow. Welcome back to Afterglow, I'm Mark Chilla. We've been exploring the early years of Nat King Cole and his King Cole Trio this hour, looking at a new box set about this time period from Resonance Records, and talking to jazz historian Will Friedwald. In the late 1930s, the King Cole Trio had yet to be signed to a major label. They were performing live in Los Angeles, honing their jazz chops, with the dynamic duo of Cole on piano and Oscar Moore on guitar as the spotlight. They were perfecting their sound on radio as well, recording trio pop vocals for radio transcription companies like Standard and MacGregor. Their reliability as an ensemble also got them work as a backing band. We're so used to thinking of Cole as a solo vocalist that it's hard to imagine him taking a back seat to another singer. However, the King Cole Trio accompanied both solo singers and vocal groups around 1940. Let's hear from some of those records now. First, this is a recording from 1939 for the Standard Transcription Company, featuring the vocal group known as the Dreamers, a group in the style of the Inkspots or the Delta Rhythm Boys. This is the Dreamers with the King Cole Trio performing the song "Music Will Chase Your Blues Away" on Afterglow.
If you're blue and broken-hearted, and your lover you have departed, don't be blue or be downhearted.
Music will chase your blues away.
If you can't find that certain someone, bide your time for there'll soon come one. You'll be happy all day because
music will chase your blues away.
Music chases blues away, makes you happy and gay for a day. Music, music, shout hallelujah.
Talk about the judgment day, say.
Music, music makes you dream of green, green pastures way up above. You'll be happy all day because
music will chase your blues away.
Years and years I said it. Music, music, shout hallelujah.
Talk about the judgment day, say.
Music, music, make you dream of green, green pastures way up above. You'll be happy all day because
music takes your blues away.
Tell me something.
What you know, Josie?
I ain't knivin', I ain't jivin', I don't know.
What you know, Josie?
Don't know Latin.
What you know, Josie?
Ain't high happy.
What you know, Josie?
I ain't foolin', I need schoolin', I don't know. I don't know. Mama tried to tell me so. Papa wouldn't let me go. Couldn't even see a movie show.
What you know, Josie?
Just can't figure.
What you know, Josie?
I don't dig it.
What you know, Josie?
Quit your squawking. I ain't talking. I don't know. Joe?
I don't know nothing.
What you know, Joe?
Tell me something.
Say, what you know, Joe?
I ain't conniving, I ain't jiving, I don't know.
What you know, Joe?
I don't know Latin.
What you know, Joe?
Ain't high having.
What you know, Joe?
I ain't fooling, I leave schooling, I don't know. I don't know. Mama tried to tell me so. Papa wouldn't let me go. Couldn't even see a movie show. No,
what you know, Josie?
Just can't figure.
What you know, Josie?
I don't dig ya.
What you know, Josie?
Quit your squawking. I ain't talking. I don't know.
King Cole Trio with big band singer Anita Boyer performing the Trummy Young song What You Know Joe. That recording was made for the McGregor Transcription Company in 1941. Before that, we heard the King Cole Trio accompanying the vocal group The Dreamers in 1939 with the song Music Will Chase Your Blues Away. These radio transcriptions, as we've discussed, were not made available for commercial sale. The King Cole Trio was signed to Decca Records late in 1940, and they cut their first commercial recordings there. However, other recordings that they made before that happened to be sold without their knowledge. Here's Nat Cole biographer and jazz historian Will Friedwald.
Before that, they had done some transcriptions for a company called Davis and Schwegler. The company wound up pressing them as 78 and selling them as 78. I don't know how many copies they sold or where they were sold, but it was very, very small distribution. And then he also made some recordings for a company that was only distributing to jukeboxes, and that was Amma Records in 1940. And that's an interesting session. For some reason, they added a drummer to it who completely gosses it up. But then the jukebox company went out of business, and they sold it to Varsity, who then issued it and then sold it again to Savoy. I mean, that was an early commercial record that was issued, I think, in like August 1940. But I would contend that when Nat did those dates, he did not think they were going to be sold commercially. The first time he actually went into a studio and knew it was going to be a record that was for sale to the public was the first of the Decca sessions, which was done in Los Angeles. Then he did one date in Chicago for Decca and two in New York.
Those early Decca recording sessions also show Nat King Cole flourishing as a solo vocalist. As early as 1938, Cole was more or less the lead vocalist of the King Cole Trio. You can hear him taking solos even as the trio emphasized group singing.
Nighttime brings dark rapture, bringing us delight for what we both recapture. The thrill that fills the still of Congo night.
However, it was around 1940, as more people began to take notice of Nat's singing voice, that his solo recordings began to take shape. The central song to his development as a singer was the Cliff Burwell and Mitchell Parrish song, Sweet Lorraine. Here's jazz historian Will Friedwald.
There's a famous story that Nat told that some drunk in the audience wouldn't let him alone until he sang Sweet Lorraine. And for all I know, that might have happened, but the more likely scenario is that Nat was always willing to try something new, and when he saw that people were responding to his solo vocals, and more importantly to his ballad vocals, the idea that he could sing a love song, something like Sweet Lorraine, was a big step. There's a cute story that when he played New York for the first time, he was really, really trying to sing, and the song that he was concentrating on was Sweet Lorraine, and he would get to the club like in the middle of the afternoon and he would just rehearse Sweet Lorraine over and over and over. And finally, the bookkeeper who was sitting there hearing Nat Cole sing Sweet Lorraine like 50 times, she called the boss and said, "You got to get this guy to stop or to sing something else. He's driving me crazy with that Sweet Lorraine." And the club owner said, "No, you got to be mistaken. Nat doesn't sing. It's got to be somebody, Nat couldn't be singing."
I'll play for you now a few of those early Decca sides, beginning with the ballad in question. This is Nat King Cole and the King Cole Trio in December 1940 with the song Sweet Lorraine on Afterglow.
Now I just found joy. I'm as happy as a baby boy, 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 with another brand new choo-choo joy. When I met my sweet Lorraine, 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 pair of eyes that are brighter than the summer sky. When you see them, you realize why I love my sweet Lorraine. Now when it's raining, I don't miss the sun, because it's in my baby's smile, oh, oh. And to think that I'm the lucky one that will lead her down the aisle, oh, oh, oh. Each night I pray that no one will steal her heart away. I can't wait until that lucky day when I marry sweet Lorraine. In my baby's smile, oh, oh. And to think that I'm the lucky one that will lead her down the aisle, oh, oh, oh. Each night I pray that no one will steal her heart away, oh, no. I can't wait until that lucky day when I marry sweet Lorraine. Ba-da-ba-bo-da-do-re-do.
Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Going downtown to see a man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Time and time waits for no man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand.
Standing on the corner, all full of jive. But you know that you're my boy, and I'll always give you five.
Da-da-da-da. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see your man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see your man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Time and time waits for no man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand.
Standing on the corner, all full of jive. But you know that you're my boy, and I'm forced to give you five.
Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see a man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand.
King Cole Trio with two of their first singles for Decca Records. Just now we heard Hit That Jive Jack, recorded in New York in 1941. Before that, his signature song Sweet Lorraine, recorded in Hollywood in 1940. The King Cole Trio did not stay signed to Decca for that long. World War II had caused many record labels to cut back on resources, so the label decided that it could not support more than one black pop group. Decca put their support behind the more established act, Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five, cutting the younger King Cole trio loose. However, Cole and the trio had other tricks up their sleeve. Here's jazz historian Will Friedwald.
They got to the point where they became much more of a serious jazz group by like 1940. They were playing many more instrumentals, more extended improvisation. I mean, when you have two jazz virtuosos, that's kind of an obvious decision. And interestingly enough, that's when the white press and the jazz press and jazz fans, white jazz fans, first discovered Nat was around 1940. And, you know, that's what they thought that Nat was coming from. They didn't realize that he had a whole other side to him that was more pop-oriented. But that sort of started this thing that when Nat started to go back in a pop direction later on, a lot of them accused him of deserting jazz and stuff like that, which really wasn't true. He'd been making pop music from the very beginning.
Jazz became a focus for the group in the early 1940s, and much of this was the result of a chance meeting with a young, white, aspiring record producer named Norman Granz. Granz would later become the founder of Verve Records and the successful Jazz at the Philharmonic concert series. But before he met Nat, he was just a jazz fan. They were both based out of Los Angeles. However, they met in New York while Nat was performing at a club called Kelly's Stable, and Granz was on leave from the Army. Here's Friedwald again.
Nat played something like 9 months on and off in New York at Kelly's Stable, and Norman heard him and just was blown away. He thought he was one of the greatest piano players he'd ever heard. Correctly so, he was. And he and Norman became very, very famous friends, and later on, Norman became a hugely successful producer of jazz recordings and concerts, and he always gave credit to Nat as being his first African-American friend and his first friend in the community of musicians and the first guy who really gave him an entry, a passport into the world of musicians and enabled him to do things like start Verve Records and start the famous Jazz at the Philharmonic concert series. And he was able to do all that because Nat really brought him into that world. And he said in turn that he thinks that he was the first white person that really got close to Nat.
Back in LA, Nat and Norman began to organize Sunday night jam sessions. Norman collected the money and Nat organized the band, drawing upon all of the musicians who made their way through the West Coast. This jam session was ultimately the impetus for the Jazz at the Philharmonic concert series in the 1940s. Cole was also present for Norman Granz's first recording session as a producer, which became one of the most legendary recording sessions among hardcore jazz fans. It featured Nat Cole on piano and the legendary Lester Young on saxophone, performing in a freer style than anyone was used to hearing on record. Here's Friedwald again.
Well, that was a direct outgrowth of the early jam sessions they did. I think actually Lester Young was not part of Basie at that point. Lester was in town. He was based in Los Angeles, and he was a frequent participant in the Nat Norman jam sessions. And obviously he was the most, you know, along with Coleman Hawkins, the most famous saxophone player of that period. And he was a natural partner with Nat. And it was Norman's genius move to record the two of them together. And even though he insisted that they make these extra long records, which really he had a hard time releasing because of the technology of the day, but they're all like 4 minutes long, they could not be, you know, distributed through normal channels. So really only Cognoscenti knew about them for many, many years. They weren't available until on LP until at least 10, 15 years afterwards. And they're really not structured like big band records or anything like that. They really are just a piano player and a great piano player and a great saxophone player just stretching out, and they're just beautiful. They're just two master musicians let loose.
Thank you.
The Vernon Duke song, I Can't Get Started, performed there by pianist Nat King Cole and tenor saxophonist Lester Young. That comes from a legendary jazz session recorded in July 1942 and produced by Norman Granz. 1943 was a pivotal year for Nat Cole. That year, he acquired a new manager, Carlos Gastel, who helped guide his career for the next decade. And that same year, he and the trio signed to Capitol Records, a brand new label formed in Los Angeles by music shop owner Glenn Wallace and songwriters Johnny Mercer and Buddy De Silva. Over the next 10 years, Cole would sell over 15 million records for Capitol, and the label later gave their iconic downtown LA headquarters the name The House That Nat Built. His first hit for Capitol was a song that he wrote earlier that year based on an old sermon his father used to give. It was called Straighten Up and Fly Right.
A buzzard took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzzard tried to throw the monkey off his back, but the monkey grabbed his neck and said, "Now listen, Jack. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right."
Not only did the song help make Nat a star, but it also taught him a valuable lesson about the music business. Here's Cole biographer Will Friedwald again.
There's a famous story that after he wrote Straighten Up and Fly Right, the publisher gave him $50, and that was it. But Nat never let that happen to him again. After a few years, he started his own publishing company, and then when he found, like, Nature Boy, when the song Nature Boy came to him, he published it himself.
There was a boy, a very strange enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far over land and sea.
And so he was able to really reap the benefits of a lot of things, like business-wise. You know, you always hear about famous black jazz musicians and famous black R&B musicians who got ripped off by a greedy system, who got taken advantage of, except for Straighten Up and Fly Right. That never happened to Nat. He always was in too much control to ever let anybody put one over on him.
To close off this hour, I'm going to play what's believed to be the first recording of Straighten Up and Fly Right, recorded in the summer of 1943, months before the Capitol single. This recording is featured on the new box set from Resonance Records called Nat King Cole Hitting the Ramp, the Early Years, 1936 to 1943. It comes from a broadcast on the Armed Forces Radio Service Jubilee Program, a radio program produced for African-American GIs serving in World War II. You'll hear that Cole and the trio were still working out the arrangement in this early recording, and the introduction is much different than the Capitol single. This is Nat King Cole and the King Cole Trio on the radio in 1943 with their hit single, Straighten Up and Fly Right, on Afterglow.
A buzzard took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzzer tried to throw the monkey off his back, but the monkey grabbed his neck and said, "Now listen, Jack, straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Ain't no use in diving. What's the use in jiving? Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top." The buzzer told the monkey, "You are choking me. Release your hold and I will set you free." The monkey looked the buzzer right dead in the eye and said, "Your story is so touching, but it sounds just like a lie. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top." Stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Fly right.
Nat King Cole and the King Cole Trio in 1943, with Cole's original song, Straighten Up and Fly Right. That comes from a performance on the Armed Forces Radio Service program called Jubilee, months before the Straighten Up and Fly Right single was released for Capitol Records. Special thanks go out this week to the folks at Resonance Records for producing the box set called Nat King Cole Hitting the Ramp, The Early Years, 1936 to 1943. That's where most of these recordings this hour came from. And my thanks also go out to jazz historian Will Friedwald for taking the time to talk with me all about Nat King Cole. His new book, published by Oxford University Press, is called Straighten Up and Fly Right, The Life and Music of Nat King Cole. And thanks for tuning into this Nat King Cole edition of Afterglow. Afterglow is part of the educational mission of Indiana University and produced by WFIU Public Radio in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana. The executive producer is John Bailey. Playlists for this and other Afterglow programs are available on our website. That's at indianapublicmedia.org/afterglow. I'm Mark Chilla, and join me next week for our mix of vocal, jazz, and popular song from the Great American Songbook, here on Afterglow.